The Real Ag Radio podcast is brought to you by AIM EC Herbicide from FMC. Make AIM EC Herbicide your first choice tank mix to power up your glyphosate for a truly complete burn-off program. See your local retailer today.
It's time for Real Ag Radio on Rural Radio Channel 147 on Sirius XM. Real Ag Radio and RealAgriculture.com is your home for insight and analysis of the issues that are impacting your farm business. Let's get real and get connected with Real Ag Radio. Welcome to Real Ag Radio, brought to you today by New Farm Canada. Big shout out to New Farm for being today's show sponsor. You can find out more about New Farm by going to newfarm.ca. I'm your host, Sean Haney. Thanks so much for making Real Ag Radio and Rural Radio 147 a part of your workday. And of course, a big shout out as well to everybody listening on the Real Ag Radio podcast. It's Agronomic Monday. Today, we got lots to discuss on the show. Lots of issues to cover from an agronomic perspective. We'll be joined today by Peter Weepeed Johnson. I want to talk to him about pH in the soil, autonomous tractors from an agronomic perspective. We're also going to cover the difference between carbon cycling and carbon sequestration. And I'm looking to do some learning there because I'm not sure I totally understand how we need to be looking at both those from a different perspective. So lots to discuss here today. We'll also be joined by Mike Bender of New Farm, and we'll also have the top ag news stories of the day here today. It's a holiday today in the U.S. A federal holiday is Martin Luther King Day, so the markets are closed, so not a lot happening from that perspective, but it's full court press here in Canada. Hard to believe we are already January 17th. It just seems like yesterday was Christmas. Now we're already mid-January, and the calendar looks a little bit closer to February, of course, and just hard to believe how time just seems to blow by. If you have any feedback on today's show, I'd love to hear from you. You can send me an email, and many of you did based on Friday's show, and we're going to get to that in a little bit. The email address is shaney@realagriculture.com, or, of course, you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. We are Real Agriculture is our username. You can find us there on all those applications. Or, of course, you can call the Real Ag Listener line. It is 855-776-6147. I mentioned the feedback, and we got quite a bit of it over the weekend, all to do with the mandate for truckers to be vaccinated that are coming into Canada as of this past Saturday. I see there are a few rallies that are happening to protest that here today at some of the crossings across Canada. But this coming weekend as well, the U.S. will put their own mandate on unless President Biden changes his mind. So we got lots of feedback. I would honestly say, I didn't do a firm count, but it's pretty close to 50-50 on how people feel about this. So I grabbed a couple of the emails that I got, and I appreciate everybody that reached out. We'll try to get to as many as we can throughout the week. And so if you have a thought, don't hesitate. Join in the conversation and send me your perspectives. So Ron, he emailed and says, "Yes, I believe in the mandate that all truckers have to be vaccinated. The only way we're going to get this virus under control is for the industry leaders to step up to the plate and require all their employees to be vaccinated. The individual decision to get vaccinated may come down to having a paycheck or not to support your family. Why should 90% of the population be denied proper health care when the unvaccinated are overwhelming our health system? I have no sympathy for those who refuse to get vaccinated." Thanks for your email, Ron. I got a few people that had definitely agreed with Ron along the same sort of line. Paul emails, and he says, "First off, I'm a fan of the vaccine. I have two plus a booster. In regards to the trucker vaccine mandate, at this stage of the pandemic, I am not sure what the reasoning is behind the mandate to disallow unvaccinated truck drivers. Vaccines are not stopping the spread of Omicron, so if that is their aim, it is misguided. If their idea is vaccine compliance, pretty well everyone who is going to get vaccinated have done so already. If it is to save hospitals from overloading, the number of truck drivers that would be destined for hospitalization is rather few, as there are only a few dozen thousand of them all told. I believe the federal government thought the idea up a while ago, and now they will lose face if they don't drop it entirely. Leaders should get over the ego idea that changing their minds is a bad thing. Circumstances change fast in the pandemic. They need to realize the mandate idea is no longer useful and move on. No, I think it is better to be flexible than stubbornly face-saving. The mandate should be scrapped. It will only cause mayhem, perhaps on a grand scale. Thanks for your opinion, Paul. Got lots of people as well that felt the same as Paul did. And like I said, about 50-50. So I appreciate everybody that reached out. And you can send me your perspective, shaney@realagriculture.com, or call that Real Ag listener line, 855-776-6147. I had a really cool experience last night. And that was, I stopped over at my mom's house. And she's like, I gotta show you something. And she pulled out a box that my grandmother on my dad's side had put some old family forks, some cutlery away. Okay, in these boxes. And she had left descriptions in the box, sort of what time period each of these forks were from. So she had some of her forks. Her name was Velva, and she had some of her forks that she had a part of her china set. But where things got super, super cool is she had a fork in there from what would be my grandma's grandmother. And so we did some research last night in some of the family books and stuff like that. And we figured out that this fork was probably from like the 1850s, 1840s. Wow. It was so cool. And there was another one there from late 1800s, another one from the early 1900s. It was very, very cool. My mom's going to get them framed and put them away. But it was really cool to see some of the women in the family that and what their china was like and the story behind it. And wow, it was pretty spectacular. And thinking back to, you know, the if this fork could talk, so to speak, and some of the stories that and how things have changed since that fork was used on probably a daily basis. So very, very cool stuff. And I appreciate you just kind of, you know, at the time you don't realize how much putting stuff away like that is going to mean to somebody down the road, right? A lot of times it's like, whatever, it's just a fork, right? And they probably thought the same thing when they kept it. And now look, it's 150 years later. And it's like, I thought that was pretty cool last night to be able to talk about that as a family and some of the stories and when people settled and who was married to who and how the family kind of came together. So very, very interesting stuff. I'm sure you have lots of stories like that as well. Hey, let's take a quick break. It's Agronomic Monday and it's brought to you today by New Farm.
Game, set, match. AAC Leroy BB CWRS from Alliance Seed is the new wheat champion. With an amazing combination of yield, disease resistance, and mitch tolerance, AAC Leroy BB is a clear winner. AAC Leroy BB CWRS is available through Parrish and Heimbecker, Patterson Grain, Northwest Terminal, and authorized Alliance Seed growers. To find your closest Alliance Seed retailer, visit allianceseed.com or call 1-877-270-2890.
Whether you're a rookie soybean grower or a seasoned vet, the Soybean School on realagriculture.com has exactly what you need to stay in the game. The latest research and the best agronomic advice from industry experts, along with local and global market coverage on demand anywhere, anytime. Make this growing season your best growing season with the Soybean School on realagriculture.com.
Let's talk about meeting resistance management issues head on. Weeds are smarter than they look. Over the years, they've adapted and developed resistance to glyphosate. So how do we continue to use it in the best way possible? At New Farm, we have great options to keep your glyphosate performing at its best. New Farm products work with your glyphosate for unbeatable burndown performance. Need to know more or have questions? We're here to help. Just ask a New Farmer.
And welcome back to Real Ag Radio, brought to you today by New Farm Canada. Let's bring in today's guest. It is Peter Wee P. Johnson. Hey, Pete, how are you?
I'm awesome. Thanks, Sean. We've got lots of snow here in southwestern Ontario, and now it's blowing like crazy. The snow stopped, but just wind to beat heck. So you get snow and it blows, and I don't know. she's not fun driving, that's for sure.
Yeah, like major snow, like Snowmageddon. Is that what we're calling it in Ontario this week?
You know, Sean, I'm actually getting a tad, I don't know, tired almost of all these new weather terms. And so it's Snowmageddon in some areas. So where I live, we got about 8 inches. Where I farm, we only got about 1.5 or 2 inches. I've been in, well, if you go back a few years, we had 5 feet of snow in one day. Now that's Snowmageddon. This is a snowstorm. Come on. We're in Ontario. We should expect 6 inches of snow every once in a while. I don't think it's Snowmageddon. I think it's a decent snowstorm, but get over it. It's Ontario.
Yeah. Yeah. It is funny how, and some of these weather, like atmospheric river was one of the ones where, you know, people are like, oh, it's a new term. But you know, my understanding was it was kind of an old term that has sort of been brought back to the forefront. But one thing is for sure, Pete, we like to dramatize these situations heavily. Like you're right. It's a snowstorm. We've had them in the past. Yeah. We're going to have them in the future. Hopefully, like it is what it is. Get out your blower.
Exactly. It's not a record. It's not even really that bad by historical standards. I don't have a snowblower, so I guess I'll get out the snow shovel. But this dramatization of weather events. And I mean, we have had some horrific weather events and that atmospheric river that hit BC, Sean, like we both got to say, like that is 1 in 200 one in 20, who would know? So some of them are real, but to call this Snowmageddon is just overkill, simply overkill.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think, you know, like I love old Western movies, but you think about people living in the late 1800s and then you think about like a heavy, heavy snowstorm and just the conditions they were living in and, you know, their livestock were kind of maybe their source of food for the winter. Like, boy, the level of stress, like now we're stressed because we can't drive down to McDonald's to get a coffee. They're stressed about their livelihood and their ability to survive. Like I just couldn't imagine living through some of those storms.
Well, absolutely. And not just the storms. I mean, gosh, the world has changed so much. If you go just back to the 1850s, you would have localized famines where people starved to death. Whereas if, you know, I don't know, 100 miles away or 50 miles away, they had lots of food because the weather had been fine, but they didn't have railways. They didn't have transportation. It really is just a different world that we live in now. And it's good, but we do like to over-dramatize things. There's no question about that.
Yeah. No, for sure. Hey, last week we had mentioned that you were down in Havre, Montana, giving a talk at the 406 Agronomy Conference. And there was a lot of discussion there about pH and some of the pH issues they're dealing with in Montana, but as well in the Western Canadian prairies, same sort of thing. What were some of your takeaways?
Yeah, so it's because of the dry weather, you know, it's 2 years of drought in Montana, just like it is in areas in Western Canada. I know not all of Western Canada has been record drought for 2 years, but when you get these record droughts, it is just astounding, actually, to me, how much impact our nitrogen fertilization practices can have on pH. And so in their data set, on a clay loam soil, 100 pounds of nitrogen applied as urea, and they would increase soil pH by 0.04 units. And you say, well, that's not that much. But on a sandy loam or a silt loam, it was 0.14 pH units. Remember, pH is a logarithmic scale. So when you change one unit, it's actually 10 times the acidity. And if you think about 0.14, if I go 10 years at 100 pounds of actual nitrogen, and that doesn't get utilized, the plants don't pick it up and neutralize the hydrogen ions that I'm putting in the soil, that's 1.4 pH units. And so they had pHs that they'd measured at 3.8. And you just go, man, that is incredibly low. Nothing was growing in those areas. And we have to get better at managing this. And so they talked about management practices, but it astounded me how quickly that has been happening, given the dry weather that we've had and the fact that we're putting all the nitrogen fertilizer on up front. And then if we don't get the rain, there's just way too much nitrogen there, and it ends up in this soil acidity.
So what did I do? What do I do if my pH is dropping like that? Or are some of them, like I think of putting down lime. Is that what they're doing?
Yeah. So lime is the easy answer. The problem is to lime a pH of 3.8, and every soil type is different, but they were talking of up to $1,400 an acre to get enough lime to raise the pH back up to 6, where they could actually grow decent crops.
Oh goodness!
And then, yeah, like how do you spend that much money? That's like buying the land all over again. So, and the lime doesn't last forever. It will last for a significant amount of time, but it doesn't last forever. Particularly if you keep doing the same things, and we keep in these dry weather conditions. The other one that I found really interesting, and I've known before that this works as well. By the way, Sean, we lime all the time here in southwestern Ontario, but the lime is cheaper here. And so for us to lime, you know, we might spend $300 an acre, but that's on land that is worth $30,000 an acre versus spending $1,400 an acre on land that's worth, I don't know, $2,000 an acre.
Yeah. So and you're growing corn every, you know, corn beans, they're growing winter wheat and maybe fallow. Like there's a difference.
Absolutely. That the typical, they have 5 million acres of wheat out of 7 million acres of crop.
Yeah.
So that tells you that wheat is king in that part of the world. There's just no doubt about it. But yeah,
heaven for you. Did you deem that heaven as wheat, Pete? You're like, this is like the promised land. Did you like that?
It was so fun when I got up to speak, Sean. I was able to say, finally, I come. This is the Mecca for wheat, Pete. And then later in the presentation, I told them they were absolutely stinking nuts because growing the same crop following itself is never a good thing. Don't do it. Rotate. So I spoke out of both sides of my mouth on that one, Sean.
like any good keynote speaker does. So you were getting to the second thing. Sorry, I interrupted and delayed you.
No, for sure. So the other thing is phosphorus. And this is kind of almost a dichotomy, because when we buy phosphorus, typically it's MAP or it's MES, but it's got some nitrogen. And that nitrogen is part of the problem because it's always the ammonium form and urea, which is NH2, or ammonium, which is NH4. As soon as you see those hydrogen ions attached to the nitrogen, you know that you're acidifying the soil. If you only bought nitrate, which is NO3, then you're not. But the phosphorus, by upping the phosphorus rate when you seed the crop, the phosphorus in that MAP will tie up the aluminum so that the plant doesn't go aluminum toxic. So you prevent aluminum toxicity, which is often why the plant dies when it's trying to grow at low pH. So increasing your phosphorus applications can definitely help the plant overcome the low pH, but you still gotta, you know, account for that nitrogen, and split nitrogen just has to become part of the process, where you put on 50% or 2/3 of the nitrogen up front. And then when you get the third year of drought in a row, or you get that super dry year like you did in Western Canada this year, where the wheat is only 12 or 16 inches high, you don't put the second application of nitrogen on so that you don't increase the acidity without the crop growth. When you get crop growth that is in balance with the amount of nitrogen you apply, the crop will actually release hydroxyl units into the soil, and it will neutralize most of that nitrogen hydrogen, the hydrogen coming out of the nitrogen that causes the acidity. It doesn't do it 100% because nitrogen use efficiency is nowhere close to 100%, but it still helps a whole bunch. But yeah, MAP or phosphorus, increasing those rates, growing crops. The other thing they talked about was going back to pasture and having more cattle. and using species. There are species of pasture grasses that will tolerate quite low pH. And over time, those pasture grasses will hopefully raise the pH as crop growth neutralizes those hydrogen ions. But it's a slow process, and it's definitely not cheap.
Yeah, that's a real challenge because the solutions aren't easy, right? And you know that if you don't fix it, if you don't fix it, it doesn't get better from a yield standpoint for sure, right?
The problem with low pH is then you get less crop growth because the pH and the aluminum toxicity is reducing your crop growth, which just exacerbates the problem because you need the crop growth to neutralize those hydrogen ions. So yeah, you have to figure your way out of it. And lime, while it's the answer for us here in Ontario, in Western Canada, boy, it's a pretty expensive fix.
The other thing I wanted to mention to you was of course, every year in the U.S. they have the NCGA yield contest for corn, and David Hula, wow, once again, over 600 bushels on corn.
Yeah, just incredible, man. I wish I could figure out that secret, Sean. We had some really good corn this year in Ontario. I mean, gosh, the AgriCorps average yield is, I think, 200.4 bushels per acre. So we're over 200 bushels per acre. That's a first ever for us. But that's one third of over 600 bushels per acre. And a lot of it's soil. I mean, David has definitely excellent soil where he's farming. And he's an excellent farmer and feeds it well. But to be consistently able to go north of 600 bushels an acre is quite incredible. No doubt about it.
Yeah, without question. And it's once again, I'll save everybody the time. I don't want to hear your emails about how it's not practical and just how much money would he lose if he did that. That's not the point. The point is showing that we can push the potential of the plant. The other part is, what are the things that we do in trying to get a 600 bushel crop that we can apply to our commercial application? It's not everything, but there are pieces. And that's the part of the learning and pushing the envelope. I personally do like some of these contests. Just like I like, you go to a farm show and they have the innovation awards, right? In many cases, not practical. Well, hey, when we go to Agritechnica, a lot of that stuff you see now is a prototype. In 2 years, they've moved on to something else. A lot of the stuff doesn't actually hit the market, but it showcases where we potentially could go and allows people to dream and apply innovation to some of those dreams. So that's what it's all about, Pete.
Yeah, absolutely. I love people like David Hula, Randy Dowdy, even here in Ontario and our Yen, people that want to push the bar and see how far they can push it. And maybe the first time they do it, it's not economical, although north of 600 bushel per acre can pay for an awful lot of input, Sean, I just got to say.
Especially at today's prices.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, push the bar on a small acreage and see what you can do. It's critical, no question.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to hear a product spotlight with today's show sponsor, New Farm. We're talking to Mike Bender. Then Pete's going to come back, and then we've got the top ag news stories of the day. Yet you're listening to Real Ag Radio. It is Agronomic Monday.
Contrary to what Grandpa always said, it's important to count your chickens both before and after they hatch. That's why the University of Guelph, in partnership with RBC and FCC, has designed a free, self-paced online course to empower you with the knowledge and confidence to take your agribusiness to the next level. Invest in your business. Invest in yourself. Enroll today at GuelphAgriculturalManagement.com.
Whether you're seeding, harvesting, or anything in between, the Wheat School on RealAgriculture.com has you covered. Timely agronomic information from industry experts available online anytime. Give your wheat crop a good start and a great finish with the Wheat School on RealAgriculture.com. Brought to you by C&M Seeds, Syngenta Canada, and the Alberta Wheat and Barley Commission.
As you look ahead to the next growing season, there's a lot to consider when it comes to your crop. You need every possible advantage available to you. The Pulse School on realagriculture.com has everything you need to make the best choice for you and your farm. On-demand videos with leading industry experts, available anywhere, anytime. Go into the season confident and ready with The Pulse School on realagriculture.com.
This segment of Real Ag Radio is brought to you by Pride Seeds, providing leading genetics and exciting new technologies to corn and soybean growers across Canada. Pride Seeds, focused on performance each and every day. Visit prideseed.com for more information.
And welcome back to Real Ag Radio. It's now time for a product spotlight. We're talking with Mike Bender. He's the tech services manager for Western Canada for Nufarm. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Sean, I'm doing well. And yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. Great to hear from you. So, Mike, it's that time of the year when farmers start getting ready for the growing season. We're still seeing lots of uncertainty due to things like COVID-19. But one thing's for certain, we know weeds will need to be controlled again this coming spring. We're going to chat today about the importance of doing pre-seed burn down and the benefits of using products with multiple modes of action. So, Mike, why should early season weed control be such a high priority for farmers in the spring?
Yeah, you know what, Sean? We understand that there are several benefits of having a pre-season burn down this upcoming spring. For the majority of crops in Western Canada, that early weed removal really reduces that competition for that valuable moisture nutrients that are required for that important seedling development. And we know that in turn, that can have the potential to minimize any yield loss by improving that critical weed-free period for most crops. Also, agronomically, we know that one of the most effective ways to control weeds and, more importantly, to delay herbicide resistance is by utilizing that pre-seed tank mix. So as we go into next spring, you know, having that pre-seed application will definitely allow a grower to utilize multiple mode of actions that does help to reduce the selection pressure on glyphosate.
Yeah, so let's talk about the why of that. So, you know, products like Blackhawk, Conquer, Goldwing, Thunderhawk, multiple modes of action. Why is that better practice than just glyphosate?
Yeah, so if you take a look at the history of glyphosate here in the West, glyphosate alone has been losing some of its efficacy on weeds that are developing resistance to that group 9. And keep in mind, all these products were designed with managing herbicide-resistant weeds. So you'll notice that all of our pre-seed products have two or more mode of actions at time of pre-seed application, which really does allow growers to manage and stay ahead of developing weed resistance versus just straight glyphosate alone. And depending on which weed species and crops you're targeting on your farm this spring, there could definitely be a fit for Blackhawk. So when you think about cereals, Blackhawk has a great fit. If you're in the black soil zone and you're looking for some short-term residual, you know, Thunderhawk could be an option. And when you look at Goldwing, you know, very common ahead of pulses, and where growers have had a lot of success with Conquer 2 has been ahead of canola. And all of them come with, you know, multiple mode of actions that are really great at managing those group 2, 4, 9 herbicide-resistant weeds. And we know that has been on the rise here in Western Canada for quite some time. And so as we go into next spring, all four products really add to the power of glyphosate by getting a little bit quicker burn down and more effective burn down prior to seeding.
Mike, does Nufarm have any promotions for their pre-seed burn down products this upcoming season?
Yes, we do, Sean. We have the Nufarmer Nation Grower Rewards Program, which is absolutely new from a Nufarm perspective, where growers can earn up to 12% back on our pre-seed brands that include, you know, the Blackhawk, Conquer 2, Goldwing, and Thunderhawk. And to join Nufarmer Nation, farmers must be registered for the program by having a minimum purchase of 160 acres of Conquer 2 or 160 acres of Velterra Easy or Fierce Easy. So at the end of the day, the program is very easy to understand, and it allows us to give back and show appreciation for our loyal Nufarm customers.
Nufarmer Nation. I like that. So, Mike, if a farmer wants more information, where should they go?
Yeah, Sean, if a farmer wants more information on our pre-seed burn down portfolio and local recommendations for your farm, you can visit nufarm.ca, or you can also talk to your local sales agronomist from your retail, or you can call our 1-800 number at 1-800-868-5447.
We've been talking to Mike Bender with New Farm. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for joining us here today on Real Ag Radio.
Hey, John, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
We're going to continue Agronomic Monday. When we come back, Peter W.P. Johnson will be back with us, and then we'll also have the top ag news stories of the day. You're listening to Real Ag Radio, Rural Radio 147, brought to you today by New Farm Canada.
We knew we were doing something right when our competition started swearing every time they talked about us. Just the other day, I heard someone saying, "Have you seen this f***ing Seedmaster Ultra Pro 2? They got third-party PAMI testing that confirms its individual row metering delivers uniform f***ing seed placement, near zero seed mortality, and no impact on f***ing germination results." We take it as a huge f***ing compliment. Start raising your f***ing ROI at Seedmaster.ca.
Before you get back in the field this year, spend some time with the Corn School on realagriculture.com. Get all the information you need on hybrid selection, planting depth, crop inputs, and more from a wide range of industry experts. A massive library of video content is available on demand when you need it most. Spend your time outside of the field, inside the classroom, with the Corn School on realagriculture.com.
And welcome back to Agronomic Monday here on Real Ag Radio, brought to you today by New Farm. I'm joined by Peter W.P. Johnson. Hey, Pete, another topic I wanted to cover was you and I were having a text conversation about autonomous tractors. And of course, in the last couple of weeks, you know, John Deere has got a lot of the attention on that 8R that's going to be coming out to be fully autonomous. I also heard that you're going to be able to retrofit some of your old units to the new technology. So that's kind of fascinating and interesting for sure. This is definitely a space where, you know, we talked earlier about dreams and, you know, pushing the envelope. This is something that we were talking about 6 years ago that felt like it was a long ways into the future. But reality, because we're pushing ourselves on this one, we see there's potential. Reality is becoming real here in 2022. There's a lot of examples. Talk about the one in Australia.
Yeah, so Scott Shearer, Dr. Scott Shearer from Ohio, he talked at the Grey Bruce Farmers Week. And he just he talked about autonomous and where it's going. And even here in Ontario, we have agribusiness and growers now. Hagerty Creek Farms, they have a DOT unit that they're using to go out and spray. And so this, it's a steep learning curve, but people are making it work. And what's really interesting that Scott talked about, in from my perspective at least, is in Australia, there's a company, and they're building sprayers, and they're building only autonomous sprayers. They're not big sprayers, and this is the one thing I think that autonomy really can bring to us. We've been fighting compaction, and you know, we every time we look, they're coming out with bigger combines and wider planters, and oh, when I look at crop growth behind some of these units, it's just horrendous. We actually have a compaction conference coming up in about 2 weeks out in North Dakota that is just like, we have to deal with this. It's a huge issue. You go to autonomy, all of a sudden you can run multiple units small, and we can solve compaction much, much easier. But what I found interesting in Scott's discussion was this company that they built 20 sprayers so far, and they're calling it farming for service. So you can't buy one of their sprayers. And the reason you can't buy one of their sprayers is that the updates are happening so fast and they're so technologically advanced that they just don't want to go down the road of having anybody have a bad experience. So instead, you rent these sprayers, and the sprayers come with a technician. The technician brings whatever, 2, 3, 4 sprayers, whatever you need, and he gets to your farm. He maps all the fields. They get it all put in the database. And then the technician leaves. You just have to keep the sprayers filled up. If there's a problem, you call the technician. They get back there immediately. They fix the problem. They keep you going. But you cannot buy these sprayers. They're farming for service. And it really, I don't know, it looks like a different way that agriculture could develop than what I really had thought about from that perspective.
So put your farmer hat on. Does that appeal to you? That kind of transaction where you wouldn't actually own it, you would just rent it?
Yeah, you know, the thing, Sean, about this, and I think many farmers will feel this way, is there is no job that is better in the world than driving combine to me in a good crop. You get into 120 bushel wheat, or you get into 240 bushel corn, and to sit in that combine and just feel the power and watch the grain pour into the bin, if that goes autonomous, it's going to hurt me because I love doing that. On the other hand, the first little while of driving up and down the field with my 10-foot wide drill doing plots, it's good because I like driving tractor. But after you sat in that tractor for 20 hours for the fifth day in a row, it gets pretty darn boring. So I think that this farming for service, it could be a reasonable way to go, because I struggle. I'm an old guy. I'm not that technically smart or savvy, but I'm not horrible. But man, when things go wrong, what you end up doing is calling somebody, and if they can't solve it over the phone, they have to come out. So this farming for service, as much as we all like ownership, I don't think it's an all bad idea as you work that through your brain. It's a paradigm shift, but it's probably not a bad thing.
Well, and with how expensive some equipment's getting, especially as some of this new technology comes to the market, you know, save on some capital requirements, right? If I just have to rent instead of buying. I know a sprayer is something that we use more and more frequently. But, you know, if you just want to use the combine example as one, you know, in a what those cost now versus how many weeks of the year they get used, it's a pretty expensive piece of equipment. Maybe renting would be better.
And I mean, right. And for years, right, we've had the combine units that start in Texas and end up in the Peace River District. In Ontario, we don't do much of that, but why wouldn't we? If you ended up hiring these combines, they could start in Georgia or in Florida and move north and then move south again as different crops became ready for harvest. It probably would make sense for better machinery utilization than somebody owning $1 million combine and using it, whatever,
Very
6 weeks of the year, something like that.
Hey, another thing that you've been working on here in the last week or so is, because I don't know the difference, so I'm here to learn today. What is the difference between carbon cycling versus carbon sequestration?
So this is a presentation by Dr. Don Rakowski. He's retired from Minnesota, and he talked at the 406 Agronomy Conference, and I just loved his talk, because everybody talks about agriculture sequestering carbon in order to help with the climate crisis, if you will, or at least put back what we've been taking out over years. And his data quite clearly shows, Sean, and it was really interesting, that the more tillage you do, the more carbon you're releasing into the atmosphere. And he actually has data that shows that there's significantly more carbon released from a hoe drill than there is from a disc drill, because of the amount of disturbance that you do. But what he also talked about is that to sequester carbon is really slow and a really long-term process, and that agriculture is going to struggle to help out on that. So sequestering carbon basically means that we're increasing the carbon pool in the soil that isn't active. It's not doing anything. And that doesn't help agriculture much, and it takes a long time to affect that. In all of the long-term studies, that isn't the carbon pool that we've kind of utilized as we've done tillage to release nutrients. That stable carbon has hardly changed at all, a little bit, but not much. It's the active carbon fragment. And so this carbon cycling is where we make a difference. But as soon as you return residues to the soil, immediately 70 to 80% of those residues get blown off by the biological activity in the soil. And then it's that next 20% that you maybe can have better impact with in terms of building your carbon levels in the soil. But it's not sequestered. It's still very available, and you want it to be available because it's what's giving you the stability in the soil, the structure in the soil, the aggregate stability and the water holding capacity, the infiltration, but it's not sequestered. So the devil is in the details. Can agriculture help? Yes, we can help a bit, but we're going to help not by sequestering vast amounts of carbon, because that just isn't real. And it twists your brain sideways to get around this. But man, residues are good. They feed bugs. The bugs spin that residue through, and that's what you want, because it's actually the bug poop that is giving you better soil. It's not nearly so much the residue. We used to think it's the residue. It's not. It's the bug poop. So we want the residue to get the bug poop, but when we get the bugs to poop, yeah, guess what? That isn't sequestered carbon, and it's a real dichotomy what people are talking about.
Here in the middle of Canadian winter, it's hard to even think about bugs. I don't know how cold it's been in some parts of the prairies, how it just doesn't kill everything. Yeah. I didn't know that. Like that what we just talked about there is completely, I was totally unaware. It's interesting. There is a lot to learn in this space.
Well, and the problem is that a lot of the people that talk about carbon sequestration by agriculture are not farmers, and they don't understand the difference. And this carbon cycling is really what keeps all of life going. The bacteria feed the plants or give the soil the structure so the plants can grow. And that's the important part. So carbon cycling is huge. And that's exactly what Don said. He said it all about carbon cycling, but get over sequestration, because that really isn't what we're doing.
So what's on tap this week for Wheat Pete?
Yeah, so we have the agronomist tonight, Sean. I'm going to be listening to the agronomist tonight. Always, I try to take that in as often as I can on Real Agriculture. I love that program. Tomorrow night is Tech Talk Tuesday, which is part of the Ontario Ag Conference. And we're doing Soil Health Mania. So this whole carbon sequestration will be part of that. And we have the Ontario Cereal Crop Committee. Man, it's a busy week for me, believe it or not. I'm not doing a lot of speaking anywhere, but it still ends up being a busy week.
Yeah, and like I said to you earlier, it's hard to believe it's already the 17th of January. That part blows me away. But
yeah, that scares me. The days are getting longer. Spring is coming, and Johnson is not ready. Like, we got too much work to do yet.
Well, tonight on The Agronomist, as Pete mentions, 8 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Mountain, Tom Wolf from Agrometrics and Sprayers 101 will be one of our guests, as well as Gregory Dahl with Windfield United. They're going to be talking about additives, extra stuff you put in your tank to increase the efficacy and the effectiveness of some of those products. There's a lot of stuff on the market right now, right? And these two gentlemen are experts in this field. They're gonna really, really help us out with tank additives. Sorry, go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, no, it's really important, because sometimes the tank additive can have a negative impact. So you got to know when that happens. But tank additives generally greatly reduce drift, and drift is a huge concern, a huge problem. So they're mostly good, but you got to know when to use them.
Yeah, especially if you're farming up against some more residential, more urban sort of areas, drift is critical. But obviously there's a lot of attention on drift as it applies to, dicamba gets lots of drift attention. So yeah, there's, no matter where you're farming, you need to be concerned about drift for sure, especially in some of those neighboring crops. So great discussion tonight. Join us for The Agronomist, 8 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Mountain, realagriculture.com/live, or you can also check it out on our YouTube channel as well. Hey, Pete, thanks so much for joining us here today. All the best. Have a great week, and we'll chat again with you next week.
Super. Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me, and have a good week yourself.
Coming up next, we've got the top ag news stories of the day. Today's show is brought to you by New Farm Canada.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Smith of realagriculture.com. Join me Monday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern for The Agronomists, Canada's only live, interactive, agronomy-based show. Each week, we answer your most pressing questions with a rotating panel of agronomists, researchers, and extension staff from across Canada. Join me Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, or head to realagriculture.com/live at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Canola and its beautiful bright yellow flower blankets the prairies every growing season with 20 million plus acres. There's one place you need to go to get all your canola agronomic information, canolaschool.com. That's where you'll find all you need to know about seeding, disease, weeds and insects, harvest and marketing. Engaging and informative content all at your fingertips when you need the information. Visit canolaschool.com, brought to you by Invigor Hybrid Canola and BASF Canada. It's now time for the top ag news stories of the day here on Real Ag Radio, brought to you today by New Farm Canada. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, it is Martin Luther King Day in the United States, so the markets are closed south of the border, but there's still lots of stuff happening from a news perspective. We talked, and I gave some of your feedback on the trucking vaccine mandate, and that story continues to develop as we try to figure out what is the impact. Is the impact as big as some are speculating, as I was on Friday, for sure? But time's going to tell. There are a few rallies that are going on. We'll see if the government budges. I think what the key thing here is not whether the Canadian government budges. In the short term is, does the U.S. back off of their mandate that's supposed to happen here on the 22nd? There's a quote here from Stephen Laskowski. He is with Canadian Trucking Alliance. He said, there isn't one aspect of the supply chain that won't be impacted by this measure. Globe and Mail had a story that the new rule, which was announced in mid-November, has already had an impact on the labor force. Robert Penner, he is president and chief executive officer of Winnipeg-based Bison Transport, said his company lost close to 10% of its cross-border fleet of drivers after the November announcement. So Bison's a big trucking company. It's one of Canada's largest. They got 2,100 tractors and 6,000 trailers. So that's not small potatoes at all. They also said here that they've been trying to attract drivers by increasing pay that can, you know, the drivers that can go cross border. They introduced a $2,500 sign on bonus for vaccinated drivers who joined before December 31st of 2021. Of course, we're going to follow that story. Actually, tomorrow we got Cam Dahl with Manitoba Pork will be on the show. We're going to talk about that in PED for sure. Health Canada approves Pfizer's antiviral COVID-19 drug. So the authorization posted to the Health Canada website this morning says the treatment is green-lighted for adult patients with mild or moderate COVID-19 who are also at high risk of becoming more seriously ill. So this is a drug you take. You have the symptoms. You take it. Almost, I don't know if I'm being accurate in this, but kind of like Dayquil, how you take Dayquil or Tylenol cold and stuff like that. Clinical trials show it is almost 90% effective at preventing serious illness in higher-risk patients who received it within the first 5 days of being infected. StatsCan last week put out an outlook for Canada's rural businesses. About half of the rural businesses, 49.4%, expected the rising cost of inputs to be an obstacle over the next 3 months, which has been the most frequently cited short-term obstacle since the first quarter of 2021. The three next most common short-term obstacles rural businesses cited in the fourth quarter of 2021 were difficulty acquiring inputs, products, or supplies domestically, cost of insurance, and recruiting skilled employees. Slightly over half of rural businesses, just over 50%, 50.5, that were expecting difficulty acquiring inputs, products, or supplies from within Canada in the short term expected these challenges to persist beyond 6 months. Manitoba lease auctions to happen online in 2022. So Agriculture and Resource Development Minister Ralph Eichler announced Thursday that the provincial government's agricultural crown land lease and permit auctions will be held virtually beginning at the end of the month on January 31st. Eichler was quoted as saying, the online auction format ensures we can offer all Manitoba producers the opportunity to lease agricultural lands while remaining in accordance with current public health orders. Potential bidders are encouraged to become informed prior to the auction by researching the parcels and units of interest and becoming familiar with lease or permit obligations. It's going to be really interesting to see as time goes on, do we ever get, from an auction standpoint, you look at the success that auction houses have had with online auctions, why would you go back to real auctions? Really? Like, it would be hard to. Maybe some of the bidders would like to, but they've shown they're willing to pay and buy and in an online format. So I was having this conversation with somebody earlier today. You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, when it came to conferences and events, there was this sort of, you know, so everybody started doing virtual, right? And the thought was that as events started to come back, we would start to see this hybrid model where you could attend or in person or you could be virtual. And I would say in 2022, we're early days here, but that doesn't seem to be the case at all. It's either canceled because of restrictions in your province, or it's 100% virtual. There's no hybrid. And in some case where the event is canceled, the in-person, there's no virtual option. Hey, an example here is the cattle convention, NCBA's big meeting that's happening coming up here in Houston in February. There, you have to be there in person. There is no virtual option. So it's interesting how this is all kind of shaking out on how people thought it would go versus how it is going. I kind of find it sort of fascinating as people try to develop their plans on the go forward. But definitely in Canada, due to provincial restrictions, there's a lot of stuff being canceled. CPS not well attended last week. So there is, I think the writing is kind of on the wall for a lot of these events. Another thing I noticed over the weekend is that, you know, there was sort of this thought the shipping crisis was lightening. It was getting better. It had a long ways to go, but it was getting better. I saw a number of reports over the weekend that not encouraging, almost to the point where, like, the Washington Post had a story where you kind of read between the lines, almost like it's getting worse. And freight, you know, here's one story from the Washington Post. Freight is taking longer than ever to cross the Pacific, with goods requiring an average of 113 days to travel from Chinese factory gates to American hands, according to data from Flexport, a freight forwarder. On Friday, the floating traffic jam of container ships waiting to enter the port of Los Angeles and Long Beach numbered a near record 106 vessels, according to the Marine Exchange of Southern California, a nonprofit maritime group. Quote here from Phil Levy. He's with Flexport. He said, if anything, it's getting worse. I don't think there is any reason to be sounding the all clear alarm at this stage. So it's not getting better to the extent that we would obviously like to see it. And I know that, you know, you add the what's happening with the shortage of truck drivers. We're talking about these mandates, the shipping crisis. I was at the grocery store on the weekend, and, you know, there's a lot of shelves that, you know, I noticed it in the cereal aisle, spices and fruits and vegetables. That seemed to be the areas where you could tell there wasn't the inventory that normally would be there. I had just a brief casual conversation with the floor manager, and, you know, she was recognizing that, yeah, we're having trouble getting some stuff. So from whatever mode of transport that is. And of course, with some of the Omicron outbreaks on airlines, you know, freight travels also, or air freight has also been impacted here in early January. That's all the time we have for the Top Ag News Stories of the day. I want to thank New Farm for being today's show sponsor. Very, very much appreciated. Check out their website, newfarm.ca. We had a conversation with Mike Bender earlier. If you have any feedback, send me an email, shaney@realagriculture.com. Or, of course, you can find us on social media, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. We are Real Agriculture. Or, of course, you can call that Real Ag listener line, 855-776-6147. Thanks, everybody, for getting real and getting connected with Real Ag Radio. And we'll chat again tomorrow. Cheers, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Real Ag Radio. This podcast has been brought to you by AIM EC Herbicide from FMC. AIM EC Herbicide, the cornerstone of your resistance management program and your best tank mix partner for the hottest burn-off. See your local retailer today.